The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the newest edition of the Lando Lakers podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky recording a late Easter Sunday on a night the Lakers got waxed by the Clippers.
They did not rise, the Lakers.
Oh, my God. I was so badly wanting them to make this epic fourth quarter comeback just for the resurrection headline.
Yes, just the Lakers.
There were copy people everywhere across the city ready for that one.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Lakers did not rise.
They stayed dead, unfortunately.
By the way, two non-Gentiles, I think that's the extent of our understanding of Easter right there. The rising joke.
I was this close because last week we did Passover because each of us has a non-Jewish wife. Mm-hmm. And so last week we did Passover and, you know, kind of explain the story to the kids. And they're like kind of going through like, wait a minute. And my oldest looked at me and say, hey, oh, okay. Is this the one with the plagues? Yes, this is the one with the plagues. And lest you think that, you know, my oldest has like a really low level grasp of Judaism, but like a really deep understanding of Catholicism or Christianity, Catholicism with my wife, Christianity in the case of yours. I can also tell you the story of when we were driving past the 101, driving over the 101. And if people who live in LA know that there's like a church, there's something at the top of the Cahuenga Pass when you go over the 101 in LA, where there's a gigantic lit up cross. It's a, you know, you can see it for a long way. And so we were driving over it one day and my middle child, my youngest son looks at me and says, why is there a giant T at the top of that hill? and so they think about it for a little while. And my oldest says, I think the T stands for turtle. So yeah, they're not getting a lot of it, but no. I was this close to asking my wife, like, okay, so like, I understand, I got enough of the Easter story where I understand Jesus was, you know, like killed. He was dead. And then he rises on Easter. Mm-hmm. But then I kind of forgot, like, what happens after that? Like, it's like, I know what happens to the Jews. They part the Red Sea. They wander the desert. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. Here we are.
But, happy as clams.
But I don't, you know, a few thousand years later, here we are. I don't know what
everything
happens
went
next.
Pretty smooth.
Like, I mean, because I'm sure people were surprised to see him. Yeah. Jesus, I mean, mm-hmm. But I meant to ask my wife what happened next, and I never got that far. But anyway, a lot to cover today. Lakers under 500 for the week, and Andy and I will both declare that a major success, and we'll explain why Andre Drummond is short a toenail. That is a problem. And it's kind of got a little bit of fallout all across the roster, not just in what the Lakers are not getting from Andre Drummond, but how it affects Mark Gasol, which has been a big story this week. I will talk a little bit about Space Jam. Andy, the new trailer has dropped. There's a lot in it. A lot.
Yes, there is.
And so we'll unpack some of that. And arguably one of the strangest feuds in modern day sports, Kevin Durant versus Michael Rapoport. That's also been a thing. So we'll get to all of that over the course of today's show. First, though, we want to tell you that the Later Lakers podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, as always, brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The Masters, Andy, it's here this week. Thursday, it starts. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head over to betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
And as always, the Land of Lakers podcast brought to you by the folks at Delicious Pizza. Two locations, West Adams, also in Hollywood. 20% off if you use the password CamBrothers. You are supporting local business. You are supporting the local business of a massive Laker fan. You are also getting some really good pizza in the process.
Really good. Really it's, good. That's really the most important thing is you get excellent pizza out of the deal.
Quite good. So again, Delicious Pizza, two locations. West Adams, also in Hollywood, 20% off if you use the password CamBrothers.
Yeah, I in hindsight, I think actually to your previous point, Andy, I think we're probably more likely to have offended the Jews, our people, basically for yada-yadaing our way through thousands of years of history.
You know what, though? We can do that.
That's true.
That's true. We've got a permission structure that allows us to do that.
I think they can. I'm worried they converted for the jokes. No, we were born this way. Yes. But anyway, so the Lakers, they wrap up a 1-2 week. They got beaten up pretty handily by the Milwaukee Bucks. They got beaten up pretty handily by the Los Angeles Clippers. But Andy, I think this was a successful week because in between on Friday, they played a really great game up in Sacramento and got out of that game with a win. And that was the game, if you had to circle one on the calendar and you're someone like me who's worried about the Lakers falling in potentially to that play-in game, stealing games like they did Friday against a Sacramento team that had not been awful since the All-Star break, that's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny you say that win over Sacramento would be a steal. I don't totally see it that way just because I think Sacramento is so schizophrenic. You can't really count on them for anything.
You can't, but
we just saw them barely beat the Lakers before without LeBron mm-hmm. or Anthony Davis or Mark Gasol. So it's funny. You and I do regular appearances.
Steel might have been overstated, but you know they won a game against a team that had theoretically some higher end players
on and is trying to win for sure. The Kings are still trying to get their way into that playoff. Picture. You and I do periodic appearances for Spectrum Sportsnet, the television partner for the Laker broadcasts. And
we also do bar mitzvahs and quinceañeras.
But with the bar mitzvahs, we can't explain anything about why we're up on stage. We're just there because the check cleared. But I was asked, this was right before the Milwaukee game, to make a prediction about that game, the Kings game, the Clippers, and then the 5-game road trip coming up with Toronto, Miami, Nets, Knicks, and Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I actually predicted that the Lakers could go 4-4. And I think there's actually some winnable games along the way. Like you and I both think that Toronto is a potential win right now, the way they've been struggling.
They've not played. I mean, you look at the talent on the roster and like Anunoby is back. And playing pretty well, and Siakam seems to be playing a little bit better. The whole team has struggled with COVID, and I read an interesting thing where they all basically run out of energy at the same time in every game. It's not their year, but they do have talent on that roster.
But it's been a tough year for them, I think, playing in Tampa and just being away from their families, presumably still in Canada this whole time.
Tampa sucks.
Tampa really does suck. I would never want to be there for my home, whether in sports or just my home. I just wouldn't want to be there. But I think Toronto is winnable. I think Charlotte, for that stretch that I named, is absolutely winnable without LaMelo Ball, without Gordon Hayward, and maybe without Malik Monk. Assuming Andre Drummond's back by then, the Lakers could have the top three players at minimum on the floor in that matchup.
It's the other one, that game did look a lot tougher 2.5 weeks ago. That's for sure.
The other game that I think is sneaky winnable for the Lakers on this road trip is actually Miami. Because even though Miami may have the best and second best players in that matchup with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, they don't score. That is a team that struggles to score. So if the Lakers manage to get ahead of them, they might actually be able to hold off the Heat for a win. But either way, though, if the Lakers can keep up something 500-ish over the next couple weeks, and then hopefully at minimum by then, Anthony Davis is back, that would be a serious accomplishment for a team that should be credited for playing extremely hard during this period, actually playing on balance pretty good defense during this period.
Even Sunday against the Clippers, the defense wasn't bad.
They couldn't score.
Right. I mean, it wasn't airtight, but I mean, it's hard to play, just stupendous defense on every trip when you're not scoring. I mean, they only gave up 104 points to it, to the Clippers. The problem was the same stuff happened with the Clipper game that we've seen in almost all of them. They can't shoot. They shot 30% from three. The game that they won this week was the Sacramento game, where they shot 50%. From 3-point range, better than that, actually. And the reason they were competitive Wednesday, if you go back in the week against Milwaukee early, was because they didn't miss a 3-pointer I think they hit their first six in the first quarter. Well, that'll keep you in a game. So if they shoot, to your point about Miami, if they can come in and get a little hotter than they typically would, I think that one becomes possible. What you have to do is at least split Charlotte and Toronto. Like, those are games that really do afford you an opportunity to get at least one win. I look at the Lakers in the standings. Denver passed them on Sunday. They won their fifth straight. But the idea that the Lakers were going to stay ahead of the Nuggets, I think, was kind of a fantasy, at least to that point where LeBron and or AD come back. Like, when those guys are returned, they will be behind Denver. They will almost certainly be behind Portland. They're only half a game ahead of the Blazers heading into this week's game. The trick is, can you stay ahead of Dallas, or at least even with Dallas, so that when your stars come back, hopefully with 10 games left or whatever, you can pull back ahead of them and stay out of that play-in tournament. Right now, the Lakers have a 3-game cushion on Dallas. It's not big. Dallas is playing well. They've won 7 of 10. And so even if the Lakers stay around 500, Dallas still might pass them, but what you want to avoid is being 2 or 3 games behind Dallas when your stars come back. And they might get there if they can take a couple of these games. So it's that part is going reasonably well. One thing that isn't necessarily something that feels a little scary even. Andre Drummond's toe.
Hey, Brian, before we talk about Andre Drummond, let's talk a little bit about me. Here's something you may not know about me. I do not sleep well. I struggle with sleeping. This is something that has basically been plaguing me ever since I became an adult and started having, adult problems and was no longer in college drinking my ass off.
Yeah, this didn't used to be a problem for you.
No, oh no, no. High school, college, I could sleep my way through life. But once adulthood hit me, holy shit, did I struggle to sleep. And it really sucks. And I'm sure this is a very relatable problem for a lot of people. But fortunately, I found Sunday Scaries and realized they made products specifically for people like me. Sunday Scaries CBD gummies, they help me decompress, clear my head, fall asleep so I can eventually wake up a fully functioning human being, as we're going to talk about soon.
Mark Gasol
may want to look into some Sunday Scaries. There is no risk to buy. The company gives you a 100% lifetime money-back guarantee. If the product's not for you, that's okay. You'll get your money back. Sunday Scaries, they're in the stress-relieving business, not the stress-causing business. And I got you 25% off. To prove it, visit sundayscaries.com. Use my promo code Lakers for your discount. That's promo code Lakers for 25% off at sundayscaries.com. They are effing amazing. You will not regret joining their squad.
I also would like to point out it's also my promo code. It's not just yours. It's also mine.
I'm just reading what they put in front of me.
Don't Bogart the promo code.
You know, from now on,
just our. Okay. It's our promo code.
Okay.
But you know, enough. You might be one. You know, one of the reasons.
You know what?
Might
if that's what's keeping you up at night, worrying about the promo code, you should just take a Sunday Scary.
Well, I mean, or if it's Andre Drummond and the fact that's that he good. Has no, he still has a toe. He does not have a toenail. One would be significantly worse than the other, but the other is still pretty bad because, and I saw a few people, and this is, you know, when you look at the, when we talk about the ways that Kobe has influenced the fandom of LA, the vitriol that some people have gone that I've seen on Twitter for Andre Drummond for not being able to play without a toenail. It's very Kobe-esque. It's Kobe would have Ronnie Lotted that big toe and just cut it off so he could play. For people who don't know, it's hard to do anything athletic with a toe problem. It's particularly a big toe. It's really hard to do anything athletic when you're 275 pounds trying to do something on a bad toe. So like there's nothing the Lakers can do about it in the long run. Like everything else, it should be fine, but you just have to wait. It's just a bummer because the Lakers could use him now. Obviously gives them a little bit more of a margin for error, more talent on the floor. But we were sort of hoping this week on Wednesday to do a show that'd be like all about the reaction to Andre Drummond. And now we're worried if we wait too long to do a Andre Drummond reaction show, it could be like a week or two down the line. So, I mean, broadly speaking, what did you see out of Wednesday that maybe kind of gave you an impression of what he could help? What this is going to look like?
Just the difference it makes to have somebody down low that you have to account for. Because Andre Drummond is a really good scorer, and he's also a really good offensive rebounder. So he's somebody that you have to have a body on. He's somebody that you have to account for at all times because he's just too talented. Like, there's obviously some degree of luck that during that basically one full quarter we saw of Andre Drummond before Brooke Lopez stepped on his toe, took the toenail off, and we haven't seen him since. The Lakers, like you said, hit, I think it was 6 threes in that quarter. You know, there's a degree of luck that goes into that, but I also don't think it's total coincidence either because you have to send defenders at Andre Drummond. You have to account for him. And before, the Lakers were in this bad place of having unreliable shooters along the perimeter, but you don't even have to leave those guys open. You can actually guard them because other than Schroeder penetrating, there was no consistent inside threat to worry about. So it was this worst of both worlds scenario. Drummond just changes the way teams have to defend the Lakers on some level. It gives them more of a dimension. You don't want to be necessarily running the offense through Drummond. Like, you don't want to.
No, and you certainly don't want to post him up. No,
no.
I mean, he's not an ISO post threat. But like if you avoid the stuff, and Vogel is generally pretty good about this, and you know, the Lakers, not relying on skill sets that players don't really have. The temptation, I think, is to make him a post threat or to try to recreate some of the vertical game that you have with JaVale and Dwight. He is neither of those things. Like, we saw, like, there was that sort of awkward moment where they went up for the pick and roll alley-oop and it just didn't work. Like, Drummond is not a vertical player. And he's not a good post player. He's a very inefficient post scorer, but if you use him in the right way out of the high post as a, as a passer, you know, can be very effective. He's not a terrible pick and roll guy, but he is better than what they have. And, you know, when you're talent poor like that, to be able to, like you say, give the offense another dimension to, you know, make you have to, especially on the glass, you have to pay attention to him. There could be, if it's, let's say, 7 or 8 more games before those other guys come back, I could see Drummond's talent and his presence being something that's worth a game or two that they might not win. And like we just talked about, that's not nothing.
Yeah, there was a good play that he made. He was under, basically under the basket along the baseline, and had to make a pass out. And it was a pretty long pass, basically from the baseline to beyond the 3-point line to Schroeder. And it was not perfect. And Schroeder ended up heaving in a three. But what I
yeah,
what
it was
I,
a terrible possession.
it was a terrible possession. But what I thought, though, was like sort of instructive about that with Drummond is A, the passing instincts, because there are a lot of big men who couldn't make that pass at all without either turning it over on the pass or actually without stepping out of bounds. Like, he's actually got pretty good feet for a guy his size, in addition to the really good hands.
Yeah, he's a good athlete.
Sure. That was an observation that I thought was worth noting, just in terms of the things about Drummond that you may not automatically know just from the statue. Like, everybody knows how good of a rebounder he is, and everybody mm-hmm. knows that he yes. is a scorer in the low post. But like you talked about, he can pass from the
or at
high
least
post.
Tries to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he comes up with those 17 points from somewhere.
No,
I mean,
he is a terrible.
Yeah.
Terribly inefficient low post scorer. Like,
yes,
he is. If you want, like, dumping the ball down to him in the post and letting him go to work is a terrible idea.
Well, look, the Lakers miss a lot of shots. They need somebody to put them back. He's very good
right.
at it.
Yes. Do that. It will help them. How this all looks when all the guys are back is something we still obviously remains to be seen. I think it'll be fine. I think they'll figure out, because you can use him a little bit in the high post to move the ball, and they'll figure out ways to work in relatively tight quarters. You don't want Anthony Davis just wandering around the perimeter all game. And there'll still be a lot of times when Davis is on the floor and Drummond isn't. I think they'll stagger a lot of that as much as possible. See what happens in fourth quarters. The interesting thing, though, is obviously what it does to Marc Gasol. And we saw this week, on Wednesday, what the blueprint is. And, Gasol, with Drummond injured, has played plenty, but he essentially is going to be benched when Drummond is back. And wasn't happy about it, talked about it Wednesday. And it wasn't, I thought, what surprised me, Andy, wasn't that he was pissed and doesn't like being benched. I would be worried if he was okay with it. What was surprising was just how candid he was about it, and how frank he was with the media speaking after the game, just in his reaction. So that you never hear that. It was very rare to hear somebody speak that honestly about it.
Well, the way that he kept framing it, where he's not even option C at this point. He's like, plan C is like plan D.
Plan D, E, F. I'm like, they don't have that many centers. You're not plan F.
But he's right, though. I mean, ultimately, he is the fourth center right now on this team, because you have to count Anthony Davis, and you can't play four centers on a regular basis. I mean, Frank Vogel has gone out of his way to praise what Gasol brings to the table. Praising him for the way that he played against Milwaukee and Sacramento. And Gasol, to his credit, I think actually has played pretty well during this period where, ironically, he was about to get benched. And he has said that there's going to be matchups where they need Gasol. And I think that is correct. Like, you look at Denver as a possibility. You look at Utah as a possibility. Like, these are games where you're going to need Gasol.
Maybe.
Certainly, or potentially. Certainly potentially.
Right. I mean, because in theory, Andre Drummond can do, is there on the floor to handle the big-bodied guys like Jokic and Gobert.
Possibly, but he may not do it as well. Like, there is the possibility that Drummond may not do it as well or as efficiently or as whatever. Those opportunities may present themselves to Gasol, is my point. But there is going to be a lot of time where Gasol isn't playing. That is reality.
The parts that I found kind of fascinating, I mean, again, Gasol, and he was asked Wednesday, about buyouts and about, do you still want to be in LA? And he didn't say, I want to leave. He didn't say I necessarily was thrilled. He didn't give an unqualified, yes, I want to be here. The Lakers, it's reported, have zero interest in buying him out. I mean, he's under contract for next year. There's no, I mean, they're not, they're not, I mean, the buy, they're not letting him go.
I'll be honest. You know, if, I mean, just before you even get to the way Vogel was talking about this and that, like, I don't even know where Marc Gasol would go,
correct,
where he would have a better, like a better chance to have a sizable role and contend, like, maybe if Miami, like
if they're really upset, Andy, you're right. I mean, there's no easy to, right. And if he's still really upset, you can trade him in the offseason.
Right.
He will have much more optionality later or in the offseason or something. They can figure it out, but they're not doing it now because A, you don't know when Davis is coming back. Andre Drummond has no toe. There's no currency for the Lakers to let Marc Gasol leave, given that he has shown his value, particularly on the defensive end. And Vogel has gone out of his way to continue to praise. He said, I'm going to play my most important players and all that. And he's saying it in a way where he's trying to point to Gasol as one of his most important players, except he's going to bench him. But I will say this. I'm wondering if to some degree, like against before the Clipper game, he's leaving the door at least a little bit open by constantly praising what Gasol does defensively. If they show some real slippage with Drummond on that side of the floor, where they're just demonstrably worse with Drummond and it's not being made up for on the offensive side, I think that's the opening where, because I mean, the Lakers, to be honest, don't really need a ton of buy-in from either guy over the long term. Neither one of these guys is as important as, you know, obviously LeBron or AD or, Schroeder, if you want to bring him back or whoever it might be. If Gasol at the end of the year is unhappy, fine. You figure out a way to put him somewhere to put him. Drummond only comes back to the Lakers if things go extraordinarily well and he just loves it here so much, he's willing to leave millions of dollars on the table, or things go so horribly that nobody else wants to sign him. So in any other scenario, he's not coming back either. So if Vogel has to bench Drummond later because the defense just isn't working, okay. I don't think it'll come to that because I think the structures around Drummond will be such that the Lakers will benefit more from his presence offensively than he will hurt them defensively. But he is correct. With Gasol on the floor, the Lakers have been an excellent defensive team. And so I think that might be the opening he's leaving himself to put, you know, Gasol back on the floor. But the framing that Vogel has gone, you know, you made the comparison. It's a little like Sean McVay. He always defaults to effusively praising his players, except for Jared Goff that one time.
Well, and also,
it's just his natural reaction. He's trying to be supportive of Gasol, but it came out in a very weird way.
Well, I mean, I don't think it really even came out in a weird way. I think he does value what Marc Gasol brings to the table. I think also, and this speaks to just how bad the Laker offense has been because Frank Vogel prioritizes defense so much. Like I think his ideal game would be the Lakers winning 1-0. Like that would make him so incredibly excited if somehow the Lakers shot one free throw, like they managed to make one out of two and then held their opponent to zero the rest of the game. Like that's Vogel's idea of basketball utopia. But even he recognizes that the offense needs more help right now than the defense. So I don't actually think he's being insincere. I don't think he's trying to leave himself openings or, you know, like trying to get too cute by half the way he's talking about this or anything like that. I think he values Gasol. I think he sees some matchups where Mark will be there. I think he still considers Mark important, but this team needs more offensive help than Gasol has been providing them. Like there's been you and I've talked about this, Brian. Like I think in some ways, Marc Gasol's defense has been underappreciated by a lot of fans who prefer the aesthetics that you had with Dwight and JaVale as, you know, these high flying rim protectors and, you know, more prolific rebounders than Gasol has been. But Marc Gasol has been effective defensively. But the ways that you and I thought that he actually would contribute offensively, being more of a threat from outside, being more of a facilitator, they haven't been there. And this team is anemic offensively. Like right now, they need Andre Drummond's offense on paper more than they need Marc Gasol's defense. In reality, what we've seen which has been really good. They just need it more.
Yeah,
so I don't even think Vogel's trying to, you know, talk about this in a way that's clever, that turns awkward. I think
it was the framing of I'm going to play my most important players. And then Ben, you know, in putting Gasol in that group, very obviously trying to put Gasol in that group as you're going to bench the guy. To me, it was a weird framing of it. I don't think there was no malice behind it. It was just, you know, it was one of those moments where his instinct to, you know, to protect his players, to talk them up, to show confidence and appreciation, the professionalism, all that stuff came, you know, kind of just struck. It was just awkward, and it's an awkward situation. But the other thing that I think, you know, there have been a lot of moments this year where the way that players are interacting with media, I think, has changed how they talk to us. You know, one of them being when Kuzma, you know, remember the a couple weeks ago when Kuzma was IFing LeBron to get the ball like before.
Yeah.
Right. And then like, you know, like use that expression. And like, that was not something I think would have happened if we were all standing around the line. Gasol, I think, was able to be more honest and more candid, in part because this was probably one of the only times we're going to talk to him between, you know, now. We hadn't talked to him in a couple weeks. You know, he came back from the COVID thing and spoke to us about that, but he's not answering questions every day. And so you can kind of say stuff, because the guys in the locker room know he's pissed. It's not like it's a secret to them. You can sort of say things, and because guys aren't going to be constantly asked about it, because you're not going to be constantly asked about it as follow-ups the next practice, the next day, the next game, I feel like players just in so many different ways this year are being more honest and candid because of the way that media is set up. It was just, that was another thing that kind of struck me. How long Drummond is out will play a role in this, what it looks like when AD comes back, when those guys come back. Well, I mean, there's still so many unknowns around this team and what the rotation looks like. It's hard to think too far ahead. One thing you can think ahead about, Andy, it's getting sunnier, it's getting warmer, you're going to be outside a lot. You got to make your outdoor experiences better. How do you do that? You do it with sunglasses. I am constantly breaking them. I'm losing them. I you know, they get scratched. Sunglasses really annoy me. But Canon sunglasses, they're made exclusively with polarized lenses for optimal clarity, made with Japanese optics that make their lenses clearer, lighter, stronger. Stronger is a big one. I got three kids. They rip glasses off my head all the time. It's not a great habit. I wish they'd stop. They also have Italian handcrafted frames that are impossible to scratch. So use the exclusive code CanonCast15 at Canon.com to receive 15% off your first pair. That's CanonCast15, CanonCast15. Canon, clearly better. Space Jam trailer came out this week, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked pretty fun, actually.
There was a lot going on in that.
There is a ton,
going
on in this thing. It looked fun to me. You and I have talked a lot for the last couple of years about this impending LeBron James Space Jam reboot, sequel, whatever the hell you want to call it. You and I are both of the very strong opinion, Brian, that the original Space Jam with Michael Jordan sucks.
It is a cult classic.
No, it is absolutely
$40 million. It is not a cult classic.
Absolutely not. And you and I have been
a shitty movie that made a lot of money.
Very much of the opinion that even if this new one is not good itself, it will be better than the original. And based off that trailer, I see no reason to revise that prediction. If nothing else, it looks like it's going to be better.
I will say it looks like it'll be better. It is a low bar to clear to make it better. I do have a couple questions, though. The first one is the setup that they have here is that LeBron is basically playing somehow to get to save his son. Like, there's a certain heaviness that's injected into the setup of LeBron James playing basketball with cartoons against monsterized versions of NBA and WNBA stars where he needs to save the life of his son, that I feel like adds a little bit of weight that this movie might not otherwise need, because it is in all other ways totally ridiculous. So that's
here's the thing, though. I was reading an article about the movie in Entertainment Weekly, and one of the producers of the movie is Ryan Coogler, directed Black Panther, Fruitvale Station, Creed. And according to, I'm reading right now from Entertainment Weekly, according to Coogler, whose brother Keenan is one of New Legacy screenwriters, the project's long gestation period gave them time to find their own take. The general idea was that the examination of Black fatherhood and how fatherhood could be unique to LeBron James specifically. LeBron and a father of three added, these are parents who want to push their kids to do certain things because this is what they want to do, but sometimes have to look into a kid and be able to have an open mind and ear to help them become the thing that they've dreamed of. So okay. I don't mind that theme. No, but I think though, just the idea of pushing the kid presumably into basketball, you know, like trying to sort of extend your own legacy, mm-hmm. in this case, LeBron's, sure. towards his son, you know, there is that kind of weight of the world factor, which I think makes sense that the weight of the world would be settled in this basketball game.
Right. I am going to head and in the immortal words of Gary Cole in Office Space, I have to disagree with you about that. I think that is a fantastic set of themes to explore.
Perhaps just in a different movie.
Perhaps in a different movie where the fate of his son does not rest on whether or not Lola Bunny can hit a jumper.
You got to have high stakes, man. You got to have a reason people care about this game.
I do think that's probably true. But I LOL'd like in a good way. Because like Don Cheadle, who is apparently Don Cheadle is playing the role of the fat guy, the fat pig, who was in the first movie, right? The boss of the Monstars Land or whatever, the amusement area is a pig.
I believe DeVito's the voice.
Yes. Don Cheadle is playing that role, and I think is actually spending most of the time rubbing the money like that he's being paid. He's sort of YOLO'd out in this one and I get the impression is going to be completely over the top, which I am here for. It's just there's that moment where he says, you know, the only way we can do this is for you to play a game of basketball. Like, okay. Like, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief for a lot, like for the whole movie. Like, don't inject something serious like the fate of your child is in the balance here. And the other thing I have, you see glimpses of some of the pros that are turned into Monstars. Like Anthony Davis, like they turn his unibrow into like a huge feature of the whole thing.
Damian Lillard, Diana Taurasi, Nneka Nwumike, and Klay Thompson.
Yes, Klay Thompson shoots so well, he's literally on fire. As presented in the film, I'm having difficulty coming up with a plausible way for any of those Looney Tunes to beat him. I think they might have made those guys too good.
Lola Bunny can ball out, man.
That's true.
We've seen it in the first one, man. She's good. She's also and this upset a lot of people. She's less curvaceous than the original.
Yeah, that was one of the strangest. I mean, not to wade too deep into the culture war politics of all these things and cancel culture and this and that, but there was a small sliver of conservative media who were legitimately upset when the first images of this came out and Lola Bunny wasn't hot enough, because it was like, oh my God, like we have to, you know, to cancel everything. Like now we can't even have a hot bunny cartoon. Like, look at this. Like they sanitized all of it. Like I really had trouble following. I mean, look, there's a lid for every pot. I get it. The internet, I'm sure there's a corner of the internet where hot bunnies, not Playboy bunnies, but actual hot, like, bunnies,
cartoon bunnies, is a thing. That's a good rap. Someone. Lola Bunny, yes.
Right. If that's your thing, then I carry on, man. Godspeed. But for everyone else, it just seems like an odd thing to really get upset about.
I don't know.
That cartoon bunny's not hot enough.
It felt to me like we learned that far too many people in this world saw Lola Bunny as material. And I found that very, very unsettling.
I want to tell you how to scratch your itches, but
I'm going to tell you, do it a different way than Lola Bunyan.
Were I someone who would tell you how to scratch your itches, that is not how I would do it.
No, there's got to be a better way.
Steer you in another direction.
One thing, though, that is really, really fun looking in this movie.
Animated bunnies than real ones, though, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're looking for a silver lining. I mean,
yeah. Anyway, it's sort of a bunny. It's sort of a bunny human hybrid, but still not right, so to speak. This is a Warner Brothers movie, and there is a ton of references to other Warner Brothers IP. Easter eggs, or I mean, really, I don't even know if these qualify as Easter eggs because they're not even hidden. They're pretty out in plain sight. But I did a little bit of research and found through a couple articles, these are just among some of the references that were spotted in the trailer for Space Jam. You have references to, you know, visual references to, you see the characters, you go through the world of whatever. Game of Thrones, Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, Harry Potter, The Flintstones, Scooby-Doo, It from Pennywise, The Wizard of Oz, The Matrix, Mr. Freeze from Batman and Robin, which makes sense because apparently there's Gotham City, there's Metropolis, Hanna-Barbera characters, including Yogi Bear, Boo Boo, Captain Caveman, Megilla Gorilla, King Kong, which makes sense because we are in a Kong versus Godzilla season, The Thundercats, and this one is my favorite.
Hello!
The Droogs from A Clockwork Orange. Like I saw visuals of this on the internet. I thought this was the internet screwing with us. Like, and like this was people Photoshopping until I saw it in a Hollywood Reporter article. Like there are actually visual references of the Droogs from A Clockwork Orange in this movie, presumably aimed towards children. That is amazing.
I have to admit that I really appreciate that. As somebody who is constantly making references on this podcast that nobody gets, I like that. I mean, look, you're throwing all that stuff in there. You might as well, you know, like the Iron Giants in there, you know, Superman, all these other super, they're all there. So kudos to them. I'll see it. I have to now. Like we've spent so much time talking about how it's got to be better than I have to see it now.
Yeah.
So it will. Before we go,
the Droogs are probably complaining that Lola Bunny isn't hot enough.
Right. But is that where you want to be taking, like, you know, modeling your proclivities after those people? Not really.
No, they're very bad people.
No, they weren't.
They're very, very bad people.
Those men are nihilists, Donnie. Before we go, one of the stranger feuds that we've seen in recent times has erupted this week. It is between Kevin Durant and the actor turned basketball something or other, Michael Rapaport. Rapaport criticized, basically, if you haven't, go read about it, but basically Rapaport criticized KD for doing one of his KD style interviews with Charles Barkley, where he's not communicative and like just not really participating in it. KD went off.
This was back in December.
Yes. KD went off on, and I remember the interview actually, through DMs or whatever. They went back and forth, a lot of back and forth. And in the process of it, KD used some like legitimately horrific, you know, misogynistic, anti-gay, homophobic, you know, language, you know, about oral sex and just like, you know, putting him down. You know, just again, go read it. He was fined $50,000. Durant was
the reason it should be noted. He ended up getting fined because
Michael Rapaport released. Right. Thank you.
Right. He made these DMs public.
Right.
He put it out there. He said the straw that broke the camel's back was Durant threatening him, you know, talking about his wife, that sort of thing, like that. Right. That's what actually put it over the top for him, right, from Michael Rapaport's perspective.
That, but that's okay.
I'm just telling you what he said.
Right. Michael Rapaport is hardly an angel here, and, you know, is a whole other thing, which we maybe we'll talk about before the end of this. But like, I've never understood Michael Rapaport, both the literal and the conceptual Michael Rapaport. I've never gotten it. But you know, so this thing becomes public, the language becomes public. KD is fined $50,000 by the league, which again, probably the maximum they can do, but not suspended. KD apologizes not for using the language, but that people saw the language. He didn't do the "I'm sorry for the people I offended." He didn't do the "that's not me." He said, "I'm sorry people saw that."
The exact words were, "I'm sorry that people seen the language that I use. That's not really what I want people to see or hear from me. Hopefully I can move past it and get back out on the floor." Kevin Durant, as we know, still injured right now.
Right. May come back this week, though. They're saying he could come back this week. So look, this is a complicated thing. And I have to admit, I did not spend a lot of, I was, you know, busy this week doing a lot. I did not spend a lot of time on this story, but in reading around it to prep for this, I read a great column on Outsports, which is the vertical on SB Nation, I believe, that is dedicated to LGBTQ issues in sports.
Yeah.
And it made the point.
Very good site.
Yeah. Made the point that KD, who has been very supportive of these issues publicly, you know, throughout his career, the author didn't think that, you know, didn't call KD a homophobe. He didn't say he was anti-gay. He didn't. But what he did say was, this is a week and a half, 2 weeks after Myers Leonard was suspended for using a anti-Jew and anti-Semitic slur in a private setting.
No, see, that's where he's but wrong. It was not private.
In a setting where he probably didn't think about it being something that would be put out into the world.
Which makes
Myers Leonard stupid.
I know, but I think it's important to note. I believe Sid Zeigler, I believe.
Sid Zeigler, yeah.
Who wrote the piece.
Ziegler or Zeigler. Either way.
He's actually, I think he's actually incorrect in the way he's framing this. I think the distinction matters, though, and I just want to put it out there. This is something that Myers Leonard knew was public from the beginning because he's playing video games in one of these live streams. Like, right. You do this knowing there is an audience. So therefore, mm-hmm. Everything you are doing with knowledge of a public audience, whether you are thinking about it or not. Kevin Durant never expected these DMs to Michael Rapaport to be public. I say this, by the way, not to in any way try to excuse or explain away his language. I just think that distinction matters for what Zeigler was writing about. That's all.
But the point is, it did become public.
Sure.
And it was an interesting question as to whether or not the league should have suspended him, and or at the very least that there should have been more condemnation from other players, from the league, from the Nets, you know, talking about not just but like really making note of what the language meant. And it made me think of when Kobe Bryant was, you know, got caught essentially, you know, calling Benny Adams, referee, an effing F word, you know, the insert your gay slur there. That was not something he necessarily intended anybody other, maybe even not even Benny Adams, to hear. To his credit, Kobe, who did not, I don't think, was expressing that in a "I don't like gay people" way.
No,
but he was using the language in a common way where sort of homophobic language, misogynistic language is used as the put down, sexist language used as a put down. That's what Durant was doing here.
Yes.
Guys have been suspended for similar stuff, and I don't know, and I hadn't thought about it, but I'm not sure now that a suspension wouldn't have been warranted given the, and again, go read the DMs. They're
vile. They're bad.
Way over the top.
They're really bad. I think
it's out there. I mean, it got out there. And look, if you're Kevin Durant, any DM conversation, I'm not saying Michael Rapaport's an asshole. He is. And I don't like him. I've never really liked him. And I think particularly over the last few years, he has really developed into a major online asshole. But you, when you have a DM conversation with somebody like that, you have to do it with the expectation that that stuff's going to get out there someday.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the distinction that the league would make, and I think whether or not you agree with it, it's valid. There's a validity to it, even if you don't accept it, is that in the case of Myers Leonard, like we were just talking about, that was something that he had to have known was public. Like he was using that slur in a totally public forum, knowing it was a public forum. Whether he forgot about it or not, whether this is the way Myers Leonard typically talks during these live streams, and this is the one time people were paying attention,
Andy,
whatever.
What the word meant.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe he's been using it this whole time without having any idea. Thank God he got caught.
Because that's what grownups do. They use words that they don't know what they mean commonly.
Yeah. I mean, really, in the end, it's a good thing that he ended up in this shit. Because now Myers Leonard learned. And in the case of Kobe, I think what the league would say was this was while on the clock.
Did Kobe get suspended? I think he just got fined.
I believe he got fined like $100,000.
Yeah, he got fined a lot, but I don't think he was suspended. But at the time, this was also there was less precedent for that.
Right,
and it was a pretty big deal. Whether he got fined was a
no, it was a big, deal. I want to say he got fined $100,000. It was like fined both for like the language and specifically for the way he went at Benny Adams,
right. verbal abuse of a referee.
And look, I mean, there could be intricacies of that CBA versus the current one. I have no idea.
Well, I'm sure the NBA fined him the max, whatever
right.
it is.
But the point being, though, I think that the distinction there that matters is that was literally while on the clock during a game, you know, on company time. Like, you know, that at that point, that is a workplace. That is essentially workplace conflict. With Durant, though, I'm just saying in terms of the distinction, and I do think this distinction matters, if for nothing else, in the way we talk about this. This was something that was intended to be private. Whether you think that intention was realistic or not, I think contextually, it's different. It's not different in a way that, in any way, explains away or excuses the language. That's, you know, I want to make it clear that that's not my point. But I do think, though, that the context may be the difference between Myers Leonard getting suspended versus Kevin Durant not being suspended. And I think you can at least make a valid argument whether you agree with it or not.
I will say this, though. The devoting more time to it, I went the entire week. I knew KD and Michael Rapoport were having a fight. I had to kind of distinguish it from the fight that Rapoport is having with Barstool,
Trump or whoever,
right? Which is an argument. I've never wanted both sides to lose more than Michael Rapoport versus Barstool. But I will say this: the Kevin Durant apology, which I at least sort of appreciate for him not pretending to do the dance of, like I said, if I offended these people, I apologize to anyone. I wish he would take a little bit more responsibility. Look, if Outsports doesn't think that Kevin Durant is anti-gay as a human being, I'm certainly not going to, I'm not going to counter that. Like, you know, they're much more attuned to, his track record here than I am. But I do think now, though, there is a responsibility for him to take more responsibility for his language.
Absolutely.
And speak to people as to loose use of these words that are used in a way that even, you know, the context may not be like, you know, really trying to slur Michael Rapoport by calling him gay, but by, you know, but in using words that way, where you demean a person with misogynistic language, by equating, you know, gay sex acts with like being less of a man or all these, like, that's damaging. And it's Durant should take more responsibility for making that distinction of being loose with language and using, like, I need to be better about
how
you should
I
act like how I have my should, vocabulary. Be a fucking grown up about it.
Well, if you're gonna bother putting out any type of apology at all, it should be an apology that makes it seem like you care. And right. It was not an apology that made it seem like he cared at all. It made it sound like he cared about it actually being put out there publicly.
And some of this is just like KD. Don't why are you arguing with Michael Rapport in your DMs?
Dude. Kevin Durant.
I mean, he really is insufferable in a lot of ways. He's, you know, I like, love him as a player. And you know, I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but I mean, good Lord.
Like he just knock it off. Like he either needs to, and I'm not recommending this. I'm just saying like he either needs to have like a physical confrontation with somebody heckling him like in real life. So people will just leave him alone. Or he needs to get offline altogether. But like this
the answer is the second one. He needs to get offline altogether.
But like this whole, I'm not going to let this slander of any type, you know, stand. Like just stop. Like it's not working for you. Like there are people who can handle back and forths online with, you know, either celebrities, regular people, whatever. Like Damian Lillard is really good at this stuff. Kevin Durant, you're not. It's becoming embarrassing. Like just
stop. I mean, I this is just one of these things. Like guys are weird. These guys are odd. You know, to some degree, they all have weird quirks and weird competitive things and weird pathologies, or many of them do at least, which is how they get, you know, the drive to be in the whatever it is. But this one does not serve him well. I think from a mental standpoint, whether it helps him on the floor competitively, gives him extra juice to whatever, I think mentally as a human being in terms of your own happiness, at least based on what he presents to the world, it does not look like it helps him. No, so
stop, man. Like you're really truly embarrassing yourself by doing this stuff. Like, and like we both said, Michael Rapaport,
well, at least maybe he's not embarrassed by it, but I mean, it just, it's not it doesn't seem, I don't know of a lot of people, it doesn't seem like a good look.
If he's not embarrassed, that's as big a problem as what he's going through right now.
All right. So thanks again to the fine folks at betonline.ag, at Kanan, at Scary, Sunday Scaries. Also remember 20% off when you use the code CAMBROTHERS at either location at Delicious Pizza. Anything else? I think that's
pretty much it. Might be back middle of the week. Otherwise, same time next
week. Everybody and next time on Monday.
Yep.
All right. Have a good one.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.